The Trump administration unveiled a proposal this week that would nix an Obama-era rule designed to reduce carbon emissions from power plants.
The Affordable Clean Energy Rule would allow states to set their own policies for governing coal-fired plants, which means they could impose looser restrictions that allow utilities to emit more greenhouse gases.
President Trump praised the change at a rally in West Virginia on Tuesday.
Just today, we announced our new affordable clean energy proposal that will help our coal-fired power plants and save consumers, you, me, everybody, billions and billions of dollars.
The Obama-era rule called for tougher guidelines and required some coal plants to undergo costly upgrades to comply or shut down. In a statement, the EPA called that plan, quote, overly prescriptive and burdensome.
So how would the Trump proposal work, and what would it mean for the economy and the environment?
David Kaniski is an associate professor in the School of Public and Environmental Affairs at Indiana University. David, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be with you.
President Trump has long promised to overhaul energy regulation. Is this what was expected?
Absolutely. I think President Trump has been very transparent and clear, going back to the campaign and certainly through the first year and a half or so of his presidency, that he would like to roll back the various climate change related policies that President Obama put in place. And this is just one more example of sort of taking action to fulfill those commitments that he made.
As an analyst, what are your overall impressions of this new proposal?
Well, quite candidly, it's a very modest proposal that is not a serious attempt to address the fundamental problem, which is greenhouse gases that are causing climate change. I think it's important to note that the policy is really not designed to be effective in that way. Rather, it's designed to technically comply with the obligations that the federal EPA is under to do something to address greenhouse gases. But it's the replacement for the Obama-era rule is quite different in that it's really not going to expect coal-fired power plants to significantly change their operations to reduce their emissions.
Well, both the president and the EPA have made it clear that climate change is not a priority for them, and they've even taken steps that kind of remove the discussion of climate change from a lot of programs. So that not being their goal with this, what is this proposal accomplishing that is a priority for this administration?
Right. So at the risk of getting a little bit in the weeds of the U.S. Clean Air Act, which is important in this case, I think what the Trump administration is trying to do is to make sure that they come up with a legally defensible plan for sort of achieving the obligations that they are required to do to address greenhouse gases. So let me disentangle that. Under the Clean Air Act, under decisions which have been made, carbon dioxide has been found to be a pollutant that endangers public health and welfare. And because of that, the EPA is required to do something in order to sort of meet their obligations. So what this proposal does is allow them, with a straight face, I suppose, claim that they are doing something to deal with climate change without actually placing burdens on coal-fired power plants. So in essence, it allows them to technically comply with their obligations without seriously addressing the issue, which is consistent with their policy preferences.
States will have more leeway in how they govern coal power plants and regulate them. Will there still be some federal constraints on them, or is this turning it all over to the states?
Well, under the Affordable Clean Energy Rule that was proposed on Tuesday, there are a modest set of requirements to require existing coal-fired plants to improve their efficiency, which is to say to release less carbon dioxide on a per unit basis from generating electricity. Now, how that actually works in practice will be left to the states, and states have the ability to choose from a menu of options when deciding what requirements to make of utilities in their states. Those plans have to be approved by the federal EPA, so it's possible that the EPA could say, states, you're not doing enough. But in all likelihood, states will be given a lot of latitude to decide whether to take actions And they're also enabled under the rule to do nothing, which is to say, if they decide that even these modest requirements would be too burdensome on their plants, risking their viability, they can make that claim, and it would be up to the EPA to decide if that was acceptable.
We heard in that clip of President Trump talking about this new affordable clean energy proposal that it will save consumers, in his words, billions and billions of dollars. Do you see that in the proposal? Where would that come from?
Yeah, I'm not quite certain what President Trump had in mind when he was making that claim. You know, when EPA puts out rules like this, there's a very detailed economic analysis that comes with it. And, you know, according to their own numbers, when we compare this proposed rule with the clean power plant that it's replacing, you know, not only are there lost benefits from reduced, you know, from not getting the air quality benefits, let alone the climate benefits, but the cost of complying with the original clean power plan were not going to be that expensive. And they actually, the EPA finds that they're going to be less expensive than they had anticipated a few years ago. So I'm not quite certain what the president had in mind when he was talking about those $1 billion in savings. The reality facing coal-fired power plants is that, setting aside regulations, be it the old or new version of this clean power rule, you know, there are really strong economic headwinds working against coal-fired power plants, which is, you know, lower cost renewables and lower cost natural gas. And those market dynamics are fundamentally what's creating a problem for the coal industry.
We're talking with David Kaniski. He's an associate professor in the School of Public and Environmental Affairs at Indiana University. And we're talking about President Trump's new proposal about how the coal-fired power plants should be regulated and by whom. And the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reported that Wisconsin's two largest utilities plan on moving ahead with plans to burn less coal and use more natural gas and renewable energy, no matter what happens with this Trump plan. How do you see coal companies responding to this, and are they really in a position to hold on?
Right. I think this is a very important point. You know, I sort of view this proposed policy is really maintaining the status quo. And the status quo, as I just mentioned, for coal is just quite troubling, in the sense that the competition from lower cost natural gas and renewables is not going away. And if anything, the cost of renewables to continue to decline. So, you know, the fundamental market dynamics are not changing, and for utilities who are making long-term investment decisions, they understand those market dynamics, and there really are no serious plans anywhere in the country to build new coal-fired power plants. So what this rule might do is, in the short term, give a lifeline to a handful of coal-fired power plants across the country. But it's not going to change the long-term trajectory of the industry.
And what is that trajectory? What have we been seeing in the past, say, 5 or 10 years of plants that have either reduced their output or been shuttered?
Yeah, just in the past, you know, less than a decade, there have been about 200 or so coal-fired power plants that have been retired, mostly because of this competition that I've been speaking about, but also because of other regulatory actions which have made their operations too costly to comply with other environmental regulations. There also are still plans on the books to shut down maybe another 40 or 50 plants in the coming years. And nothing we've seen coming out of the energy industry in response to this proposed rule suggests that they're going to be changing their planning, which is to say, you know, there really is no future for coal-fired power plants, you know, with or without this proposed regulation.
In the past decade or so, a phrase clean coal has been put out there saying, you know, yes, traditional coal-fired power plants have been a pretty dirty source of energy, but the technology is improving and, you know, we can have cleaner energy than we have been able to get from coal in the past. Is that true, or is coal always going to be a pretty dirty source of energy environmentally and for health?
Sure. Well, clean coal means different things to different people. It, you know, for some who are thinking about climate change, it's the idea they might be able to capture and sequester the carbon emissions rather than release them into the environment. And there's some technological innovation that is occurring and some sort of examples where that is beginning to be tested out on a large scale, but it's still a very early technology. In terms of you know, the environmental consequences and the associated health effects from sort of traditional air pollution from coal. You know, coal is simply a dirtier way of generating electricity compared to natural gas, another fossil fuel, certainly compared to renewable technologies, which don't have any of the associated air pollution coming from them. So clean coal is, you know, in many ways a term that's used by politicians to try to sort of revive or sustain an incumbent energy technology that has certainly helped the U.S. economy grow over the last century, but is really not a technology for the future.
As we mentioned, President Trump touted this new policy in West Virginia on Tuesday. That was no mistake. It's a state that's very dependent on coal. Do people in coal country think that he can bring coal back to previous levels?
It's a good question, and actually some of the research that we have done here has talked to people in coal country, and there's a bit of a mixed set of opinions. There are, I think people are happy that President Trump is trying to do something to, you know, to revive or to help, you know, sustain the remaining coal that's out there. So I think there's a tremendous amount of enthusiasm in coal country that there's a president that's trying to do something to, you know, to maintain that part of their industry. But the folks we've talked to, there's also a recognition that that's only going to work for, you know, for a short period of time, and that over the long term, the transition we're seeing towards alternative, cleaner sources of energy is inevitable. And what people are hoping for is that they don't get left behind as part of that transition, and that there are opportunities to transition the labor markets and their economic well-being and their communities toward other opportunities. So I think people are, you know, enthusiastic because someone is hearing them and trying to address their issues, but also some recognition that these are very modest, very modest efforts, and that the long-term trajectory for their, you know, holding on to this industry is not very good.
We're talking about the Trump administration's proposal to let states set their own rules for coal-fired power plants. David Koniski is our guest. He's an associate professor in the School of Public and Environmental Affairs at Indiana University.
And we want to know what you think at 800-642-1234. Is President Trump doing the right thing by giving states like Wisconsin the ability to create their own policies? How worried are you about the possible environmental cost? What would you like to see Wisconsin do about our coal-fired plants? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or tweet us at Central Time WPR.
We'll continue the conversation in just a bit. Stay with us here on Central Time.
We're continuing our discussion about the Trump administration's Affordable Clean Energy Rule that was announced this week. David Koniski is an associate professor in the School of Public and Environmental Affairs at Indiana University.
You can weigh in at 800-642-1234. How do you feel about letting states create their own rules governing coal-fired power plants? Do you think the Obama-era rules were too strict and unfair to the coal industry? Or do we need to be tough on coal to protect the environment and public health? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. And I'd like to go back just a step, and can you remind us what President Obama's stricter clean power plan called for specifically?
Sure. So President Obama's clean power plan essentially set reduction requirements on a state-by-state basis. They varied quite a bit depending on the existing portfolio of energy sources used to generate electricity in states. And what President Obama's EPA did essentially was set these standards and then provide the ability of states to develop their own plans to achieve those emission reduction requirements. So that could have included things that are included in the Trump plan, such as making existing coal-fired plants more efficient, but they also would have allowed there to be the substitution of coal-fired power plants with natural gas plants and investment in renewables. And it created a lot of flexibility and discretion for states to figure out the most cost-effective way to meet the targets that they were given.
And that plan has not been implemented, correct? It's still actually hung up in the courts.
That's right. So the Clean Power Plan was finalized in 2015, and straight away it was challenged in the courts. Many states were opposed to the requirements and opposed to the interpretation of the Clean Air Act that the EPA used. Wisconsin was included in those states. And it sat in the courts for a while, and then ultimately there was a nationwide stay put on the Clean Power Plan by the Supreme Court. So the rule never was fully implemented, never came into effect.
Let's go to the phones, and Jeff in Superior is up. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. I'm in support of the Trump administration taking this action. The reason I feel that way is because I believe in local control generally. I think we learned from education. But if you let local people decide the solutions to their problems, we come up with more creative solutions. And allowing the states to take responsibility like this invites innovation and new and creative ways to deal with the problems that they have. So as a general rule, I support the idea of local control. Thank you.
Oh, Jeff, actually, if you're still there, I want to ask, do you see a role for the federal government in making sure that there are certain benchmarks that are met?
I think the role of federal employees and people who work for the federal government is advisory and guiding the states. I think the way our Constitution is set up is that state governments should have more power, and the federal government is a guiding force or otherwise a servant of the people and not. I think we learned from the Soviet Union that you can't pick one solution for all states within such a large country.
All right. Thanks for that call, Jeff. And let's get a different perspective from Steve in Danbury. Hi, Steve.
Hi. You folks in southern Wisconsin just had record-setting rain, flooding. We had record-setting rain earlier this summer, another 1,000-year storm, 3 years in a row that produced flooding up here in the north. We've been looking at the sun through smoke-filled skies up here for the last 2 weeks. If there's any more evidence needed that the effects of climate change are here, I don't know what it is. But Trump's move is a step backwards. Your previous caller talked about local control, which I generally believe in. But in this case, the effects and the impacts of climate change cover our country. The coal-fired plant in South Dakota, which is belching smoke into southern Minnesota as we speak, is an example of how what happens in one part of the country affects other parts of the country. This is a national issue. We need national solutions.
Thanks for that call, Steve. And David, a couple different perspectives there.
Right. I think that, you know, captures a lot of the debate about, you know, how and if the federal government should be intervening to address problems like this. You know, but the caller who mentioned the fact that climate change is a national, obviously it's, you know, an international or global problem, you know, hits the right note in the sense that it doesn't matter where a ton of carbon is emitted into the environment, whether it's in Wisconsin, Indiana, California, Beijing. You know, a ton of carbon is a ton of carbon. And what we've seen without the federal government intervening is that some states, you know, choose to be quite aggressive in taking on this problem, but other states do very little, if nothing, right? And if the goal is to reduce emissions in a cost-effective way, you actually want to have a national program where you can sort of reap the benefits of reducing emissions where they're least costly the best you can.
And David, the EPA estimates that up to 1,500 more people could die prematurely each year by 2030 compared to what would have happened under the Obama plan. There would also be tens of thousands of additional major asthma attacks and hundreds more heart attacks. The EPA is putting that out, but did that factor into their decision in how to put together this proposal?
Well, clearly not, because if the goal had been to minimize, you know, the adverse health outcomes, including premature mortality from air pollution, they would have, you know, decided to maintain something closer to the original Clean Power Plan. I think this is a case where the EPA had a policy in mind, a policy of essentially maintaining the status quo, and they fully reveal in their own analysis that this is a suboptimal choice along those metrics of health outcomes, right? Compared to the Clean Power Plan, because of the worse air quality we'll have instead, they're estimating that we will have, you know, thousands of additional premature mortalities and tens of thousands of additional incidences of asthma. So clearly they're not prioritizing those health outcomes as much as they are of, you know, reducing the burdens that they might place on these existing coal-fired power plants to reduce their emissions.
And briefly, at the rally in West Virginia, President Trump said that the U.S. is already the cleanest country on the planet in terms of air and water. Is that true?
You know, that's a difficult assertion to challenge. I'm not sure exactly what is being referenced there. I mean, clearly the United States over the past 50 years has made an enormous amount of progress in cleaning up our air and water, and that's progress that we should celebrate. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't take on the challenges of new and, you know, problems that are growing at urgency like climate change. That's sort of a political statement that really doesn't speak to the nature of the issue at hand.
And finally, very briefly, that announcement Tuesday started a 60-day period for public comment. What happens after that?
So after 60 days of comments, the EPA will, you know, address those comments as they see fit. They are not obligated to change the rule in any way, but they certainly could choose to. At that point, they will issue a final version of the rule, and it essentially becomes law. Of course, it will be subject to legal challenges, and we could very well end up having many years of court battles before we know for sure if this rule goes into effect.
Well, David, thanks so much for joining us.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
David Kaniski is an associate professor in the School of Public and Environmental Affairs at Indiana University. We talked with him about the Trump administration's plan to let states set their own rules for coal-fired power plants.
Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, prisoners are striking in several U.S. states and Canadian provinces. We'll find out what complaints they have, what their goals are, and how prison administrators are responding.
And on Food Friday, we'll talk about great recipes to feed a crowd, and we'll ask you what your go-to meals are when you've got a gaggle of guests to feed. That's coming up tomorrow on Central Time.